the group is not digitally savvy, shall we say. So they're older than us and they're not digitally savvy. And so I was kind of breaking down their challenges that they face. And I put a quote up, and I'll use this a lot in certain presentations. And the quote says, "If you wish to persuade me," meaning the person that you're talking to, "you must think my thoughts, you must feel my feelings, and you must speak my words." So I repeat that and I say, just think of this in all of your relationships. If somebody comes to you and they speak in words that you understand, and you can tell that they really feel what you're experiencing, they really understand you, what does that build? That builds empathy and trust, right? And then I'll ask next, who is that quote attributed to? And I get all kinds of guesses and it's always wrong. And the answer is Cicero. And the point of sharing it is, right after I show all of this fancy digital stuff, is I'm like, guys, this is 2,000 years old. It's not new. We want to make it new and freak out about all of the technical crap that's in front of us. But the reality is, this is simple and it's ancient. And you know, when you apply it to social, you scale. But all it is, if it were more complex, maybe I would feel smarter, but it really, you know, it isn't that complex at all.
Well, and the people who make social media complex are the ones who have a reason to make it complex. And they are the ones who are trying to upsell you on a very expensive package to make the engagement time on your website 0.96 microseconds longer, you know, or whatever. They have, it's very much like going to a bad doctor. A bad doctor will baffle you and just make you scared.
Yes.
A good doctor will take the most difficult thing, explain it to you in a way that you get.
Yep.
That builds trust and means that you have a lifetime relationship with that doctor.
Absolutely.
That cuts through all the BS about social media. Like one of my big hobby horses that I love to hop on and you know, go back and forth on is the idea that millennials are different than anybody else. And the thing I hate the most are the, it's not the individuals, it's the type of 24, 25, 26 year old who thinks they can walk into a boardroom of people significantly more experienced than they are and tell them, forget everything you know about human relations. I'm here to talk to you about this unique cohort of individuals who are so different than anything that's ever walked the face of the earth. You have to listen to me and pay me. By the way, pay me because nobody else knows. It's like, what garbage is that?
Absolutely.
Now, every cohort is going to be influenced by their backgrounds. Like, some of us are old enough to have grandparents or even parents who maybe lived through the Depression. If you have Depression-era parents or grandparents or great-grandparents, you know that they take that aluminum foil, fold it, and they keep it.
Yep.
They wash everything and keep it. They have way too much popcorn and everything else. They keep it. They keep it. They keep it. Meanwhile, people from other generational cohorts respond completely differently.
Correct.
I don't chalk that up to the uniqueness of the person. I chalk it up to the sociology and the anthropology happening at the time they were growing up.
Absolutely.
If you grew up during a period of abundance, your brain is totally different than someone who grew up during a period of scarcity. Now, I'm not going to date myself too much other than to say, when I was learning to drive, I would take our Oldsmobile Custom Cruiser station wagon to get in line at the gas station to get 10 gallons of gas. This is during the gas crisis of the 70s, which a whole lot of our listeners are going, what are you even talking about? But that's my point, which is I lived at a time where there wasn't the assumption you could go to a gas station and get gas, which is, it's almost existential.
Yes.
Meanwhile, you've got people, and you might paint some of them as millennials as, yeah, you've lived in a period of abundance. And even though the crash of 2007, 2008, that was not a crash that everybody felt. It's a crash that people who paid attention to it felt, and felt hard. But it, you know, it's not like you couldn't go into a grocery store at any time and buy a loaf of bread.
Exactly.
You know, so it's a different type. So it's not about millennials. it's about the swimming pool they're swimming in as they grew up to the point where their personalities are more or less solidified or at least gelled.
Yep.
To the point where they go, guess what? If I don't like this job, I can just leave and I'll get another.
Yes.
And that's true.
Yep.
In the state of Wisconsin right now, we're at what, like 2-point-something unemployment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I lived at a time, and again, this is the old guy talking. I lived at a time where unemployment was closer to 11%.
Mm-hmm.
And the home ownership, the cost of a mortgage, it wasn't 5%. It wasn't 4%. It was 14%. Yes. It was 15%. I thought when I was in high school that I would never be able to afford a house.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember that. And I'm significantly beyond my high school years. So anyway, what's this got to do with social media? Well, I'm here talking with Don Stanley, again, continuing our conversation from last week about social media and the way to look at it. I'm going to take everything I just said and apply it to what we're talking about in terms of personal branding, because I want to strip the social media layer off and focus right on, put a, you know, a spotlight on the personal branding part.
Yes.
Again, social media is a hammer, a saw, a wrench in a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Personal branding is the house you want to build. But even more, let's go even further down on that. It's the foundation you want to lay for the house you want to build. And that house is your professional self, your personal self, the reason why people should engage with you.
Yeah, I love that.
Analogies and metaphor, baby. That's where I live.
I love that.
So what are you actively teaching most at the university when it comes to personal branding?
The thing that I teach the most first is really how to define who you are and what you stand for and what's important to you. I think there's a major assumption amongst all age groups. And I think that's, you know, as you started out by talking about millennials, this is true of everybody, that we get sold an idea of what quote unquote success is. And it's definitions that are from other people that are experiences or accomplishments that are supposed to make us feel fulfilled. And I know from working with tons of people, all different professions, multi-millionaires down to people who are, you know, poor college students, that stuff doesn't, the external stuff doesn't pay in the end. When it comes down to what really helps you feel fulfilled, when many people I know who have reached the pinnacles of, they've got the Ferrari and the driveway and the fancy house and all of the stuff, and they're like, that's all there is. So what I believe in starting all of my clients out with, as well as my students, is getting to the core essence of some self-discovery. You know, why are you in business? Why are you in school? What do you really want to do? And why do you want to do it? What are the things that you value? Not necessarily particular skills, but what do you want? What do you like to experience? So as an example, one of the things that from my background is I love the idea of serving and service. So I originally went into the Air Force Academy with the idea that I was going to become a military pilot and I was going to serve a career in the military. I found out very quickly that that was not the right choice for me. And I thought when I left that that was it. My goal of serving people was never going to be fulfilled. And I had somebody who was much wiser than me on a audio tape, dating myself, listening to them talking about when they were growing up, they wanted to do two things. One is they wanted to be a police sketched artist to help catch bad guys. And two, they wanted to be a rock star. So two really like, huh? How do those link together? And the person who was talking about this realized that they wanted to be a police sketch artist, but they didn't have the talent to really draw, which is kind of a, you know, not going to help you out.
Yeah, that's basic stakes there. You better be able to do that.
But really, when they asked themselves, why did I want to do that? What they wanted to do was find and identify and catch bad guys to help people live safe. Then with the rock star, when he realized he didn't have the ability to sing or play an instrument, why did he want to do that? Well, he wanted to perform in front of large groups because he loved the energy of community, of people being together and of entertainment. Well, that person's name is Tony Robbins. And what he does is he decided that the way I can achieve that is by studying the things that hold us back, the bad guys in our minds, sketch out pictures and metaphors and words for people to help them understand how their mind works so that they can capture those bad guys and live a good life in their own head. And by the way, go on stage and perform in front of 10,000 people. So the idea for me then was, well, what do I want to do? How do I serve people? And so I heard that audio tape and I thought it was really insightful. And I said, well, my goal is to serve, and it's to serve to help people feel fulfilled and to be themselves. Because I believe that when you're coming from a place of where you know who you are and what drives you, you're a better community member, you're better to yourself, a better spouse, a better friend. And for me, that happened to be through marketing. Because a lot of people will say, well, business is all smoke and mirrors. And I said, no, I ran into a lot of really good business people growing up who just, you walked in and you felt like you knew them and they knew you and you really did. And it was a part of a community and they helped you out. And so I started looking into the ethical side of, you know, is there an ethical side to marketing? And the answer was, of course, yes. And then how do people do that? And they do it by building personal brand. And so as I started thinking with my students, you know, where to start them, it's like, I need to start them by identifying the core things that drive them. And maybe their way of serving isn't being a fighter pilot like what I wanted to do. And irony is I get to work with the 115th Fighter Wing in Madison now, helping them with some of their messaging. But the idea is that when you break down the core essence of what motivates you, what drives you, what fulfills you, there are limitless opportunities to experience that. So I start the students there because then they can start to identify, well, what communities do I want to interact with online? Is it in engineering? Is it in life sciences? Is it in global health? Is it in whatever? And they start to see, wow, there's all these different ways that I can apply my interests and explore some different areas to find out where I professionally fit. And so that is really the cornerstone. It's hard work. It is not easy, which is why people don't want to do it. But once you find that, it's like when Tony Robbins knew that that's what drove him. And then I heard that and I'm like, where do I feel like I'm of service? It really opened up my eyes to, well, I can be a teacher. I can be a doctor. I can be a volunteer. I can be all of these different things. And so that allowed me to say, well, what do I want my, what am I about? Not what did I want my brand to be about, but what do I want to be about? I want to be about serving and paying forward what's been given to me. And it just so happened that owning my own consulting business and being a university instructor allows me to do that.
I can't agree with you more on everything you just said. I mean, literally that's the litany of what I think about when it comes to nonfiction branding, and especially the idea of know who you are so you can be it. In my life, I've dealt with a lot of people who I think have been at cross purposes with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. I went to high school with a guy, and his father, who recently passed away, spent the first three acts of his life as a high-powered attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And made a lot of money, did the attorney thing, had everything that a good lawyer should have in terms of home, family, and everything else. And then he gets to the stage where he's got enough banked or whatever, and I don't know the details of it, but I do know this. When he retired, he got out his clarinet, and he started playing clarinet in a Dixieland jazz band and then toured the United States with that group for the next 20 plus years.
Wow.
In my mind, when I heard that story, I'm like, he was a musician his entire life. He had to do this other stuff to get to the point where he could say, okay, I don't need to make money as a musician. I can just be a musician.
Yep.
And I can't help but think, and again, I'm not a psychoanalyst or anything like that, but I can't help but think the day that he put down the portfolio and picked up the clarinet was probably the best day of his life. Yeah.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
So if we go back to my screed about millennials, I will say this. What a great thing they have in that they can say,
no, I don't want that. I don't want that, and I don't want that. And I'm going to try a bunch of different things because I'm not afraid. I didn't come up during a period of scarcity.
Yes.
I came up during a period where I could stumble into a job just by smiling.
Yep.
So I'll try a bunch of different stuff. And if I want to go to Europe, I'll go to Europe. If I want a tour of Southeast Asia, I'll go do that for a while. Yep. Oh, and by the way, I'll end up at an ashram on a yoga mat next to a millionaire who likes me and then says, hey, dude, I've got a job for you. You know, it's that type of wonderful, serendipitous lifestyle.
Yeah.
That can only happen because there were previous generations who did not have that opportunity. Yep. They built the infrastructure that allowed you to be able to have the life you have. And I'm not saying that you didn't build it, because we know where that can go. I'm saying you should be a little bit more cognizant of the fact that there were a whole lot of people who did a lot of stuff they didn't want to do to make it possible for you to do whatever you want. And one of my, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh, yeah.
Gary
absolutely.
V. I mean, that guy is a force of nature, you know, an atomic battery, you know, whatever you want to call him. But one of the things I love about him is he will say over and over again, if you think social media is just for 20-year-olds, you are absolutely wrong. Now they have the nativity to the tool set, and they're making the most of that tool set nativity. But that doesn't mean that you can't get with it. And the thing you're talking about is the first step to get with social media is nail down your foundation as a person. What do you want? Who are you? What do you really do?
Yep.
And why should people engage with you? I couldn't agree more. When I deal with branding clients, I'll often point out the fact that there is no good brand. There is no bad brand. There's only a true brand or a false brand. Walmart is not my favorite company. And by the way, Walmart will never be a sponsor on this podcast because they won't want to be. But I would gladly take their check. But Walmart is true to Sam Walton. Low prices every day.
Yep.
The customer should pay the lowest price possible, and we'll do everything to get that price lower. Now, you can quibble on the ethics of some of the stuff and all that stuff, but they're true to their brand. They're 100% true. Another brand I love is REI, Recreational Equipment Incorporated. I've been a member of REI since I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
Yeah, my number is 527028. And I know that because I wanted to be under the first 500,000 members, but I missed by 27,000. Yeah. I love REI because they are true to their vision. They're true to the spirit of the co-op, even if it's not truly a co-op anymore. And the thing about it is that people need to understand that for the first 20 plus years or around 20 years of REI, they were a true co-op.
Yeah.
It was literally everybody come to the warehouse. We're sorting carabiners this weekend.
Yep.
And by the way, their first employee was a guy named Jim Whitaker. Why is that name important? Well, it's because he wasn't a low-priced high school kid that they got to run the register. He became the first American to summit Mount Everest.
Wow.
And he retired as the CEO and president of REI in, I think, 1979 or something like that, whatever. But he rose to become the president and CEO of REI. Talk about America's top climber.
Yep.
Leading what I would consider America's top performance outdoor equipment company.
Yep.
You scratch the surface on that company and you go, wow, they truly are that. The funny thing is, brands who are well-founded are not always perfect. An example of that was the CEO of REI went on Reddit for an Ask Me Anything, AMA, which really stands for Annihilate My Ass. Because any CEO who goes on Reddit is going to get their butt handed to them. And so did Jerry Stritzke. I think he had been on the job less than 6 months. And there were like 4,000, 5,000 questions that people were popping up or comments that were popping up during the Ask Me Anything. Fully 10%, around 450 of them, were from disgruntled REI employees.
Wow.
And all of them more or less rotated around one thing. And it was that a typical response might be, I've been an REI associate for 10 years. I've always had the best scores on customer satisfaction. And the only thing I don't do well is sell memberships.
Mm.
The old story, what's measured gets managed.
Yes.
If they're measuring the metric of, do you sell memberships while you're in on a shift? Like if Betty is selling 10 and you're selling one, Betty's better than you.
Yes.
Well, what if Betty's not, but she sells more memberships? When it came to the brand associates who knew and love the brand said, we aren't being true to our brand.
Mm.
And in real time, Jerry Stritzke on the AMA said, listen, I'm fairly new here. I'm going to dive into this, and we are going to have a conversation about this.
Wow.
At the headquarters and in stores and with our co-op members. Because if I don't like what I see, we're going to change.
Yeah.
I love that story, because a brand is something that you hold your employees to, but your employees hold you to.
Absolutely. And what I love about that story too, is that it's never, you don't focus on perfection. You can't, because you can't achieve it. You have to focus on having open communication, whether it's with your employees or your customers, and being willing to have honest communication. Like in that case, being willing to really listen to disgruntled employees and say, yeah, I know we need to sell memberships to make money, but I've got a whole bunch of people here saying how they don't feel like they're really a part of what we're supposed to stand for. So I should probably listen to that. And he did. And that I think is really important. That's why it's important too. Like, I don't think anybody ever knows fully who they are, because we're always changing and we're evolving. But we know the things that make us feel inside, hey, I just did something that made me feel good, in terms of, you know, whether it's creating a piece of art or a logo or a pitch or whatever it is. And I think the thing we need to keep in mind is that when you start developing a nonfiction brand, it's an ongoing evolving process. So I always teach my students this as well. You know, you're always checking back to, you know, are we staying true to who we said we are, what we said we would do, or are we getting away from it? And it's important to do, you know, it's important. It's like going to the doctor for a health check. It's funny, because anything mind or anything like this, people don't get. If you tell them to go to the doctor to get your blood pressure checked, they'll say, okay, that makes sense. If they say, well, you should go to check in with your doctor to make sure your relationships with your counselor, so that your relationship with your kids is good, we don't do that. And so in the same way, we just take for granted that it's going to continue to be good or whatever. So in the same way, when you think about your brand, that's something to keep in mind, is when you know who you are, it's easy to make tough decisions because you know what you stand for. And it's easy to remind yourself, you know, why are you doing this? And I think, like with the lawyer example you gave earlier, a lot of times we lose sight of why we're doing what we're doing. And, you know, maybe that guy could have been a hobby musicianist for, you know, and still fulfilled that need while he was a lawyer. Who knows? Because your work can't be everything and fulfill every need. But I think it's such a huge part of our life in the West, Europe, and the United States, that we really need to make sure that we are doing work that's meaningful to us. And the only way to get there is by doing that discovery work of who you are, and then making sure you stay true to that. Because there's going to be times where, you know, if you don't like a Walmart, for example, and they knock on your door and they say, hey, I'm going to give you $50,000 to sponsor this podcast, and you really are against them in this hypothetical situation, you have to be willing to say, no, I respect, you know, what you guys are doing, but that's not who my audience is. That's not what I stand for. So thank you.
Well, you can see with that comment, just looping it into some of the things that Leah Rowe and I have talked about when it comes to business culture and branding, all these things are connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your brand is telling you this is who we are and what we stand for, I like to say brands say, cultures do.
Mm.
A brand will say, we do this. The culture says, okay, we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the culture, an example, again, I love to use examples because that's the best way to tell a story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Use an example. I'll often get in front of a business group and I'll ask anyone, have you ever worked at a place, or maybe you do now, where they brought in a really high performer who was a bit of a jerk? And then eventually, in short order, they find out, no, the jerk may be performing incredibly well. And typically, I'm not going to say all sales guys are jerks, but salespeople can be a little roughshod. They can run roughshod over people. So let's say the salesperson is really selling like crazy, but they treat everybody back at the home office like crap. Have you ever worked for a place that took that high performer aside and said, you know what? This isn't the place for you. And they go, what do you mean? I'm selling better than anybody else here. I can, you know, I always get the Cadillac. I never get the steak knives. Come on. What are you talking about? Yeah. And they go, that's fine. You'll be very successful someplace else. You're not for us.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you know that person's not for us? Because our brand laid down the foundation and our culture lives that foundation or makes it real.
Yep.
And you don't fit that culture.
Absolutely. And you can look at this in so many different dimensions. You know, in sports right now, they'll talk about that with the Patriot way and the New England Patriots. You can even go way back to biblical times. And what are the Ten Commandments? They're a set of rules that say this is what people who follow this way believe. I mean, and that's why I think it's important to write them out and be able to share them. But as you said, there's a difference between saying and doing, and you have to live them. And you have to know that when, you know, difficult choices will pop up, you know, the idea of having those rules, playbooks, commandments, whatever you want to call them, makes your decision-making easier, whether it's letting go of a high performer, but somebody who's a bad cultural fit, or saying yes or no to a client project. That is critical. And that's why the nonfiction is so important, because when you know that, it gives you the essence of making yourself confident of making those decisions so you can grow your business. And like we talked about in the previous episode, attract your tribe, the 1,000 true fans, and give you that base where you're able to not only serve people, but you're able to have a great economic foundation to what you're doing. And, you know, you talk about the proverbial win-win. I think it's the element that we all need to be thinking about.
I want to underline one of the things you kind of said a few minutes ago, and that is it starts with the word. In the beginning, there was the word. That's as true for businesses and brands as it is for anything else. And when I work with companies, the output are well-designed documents that have incredibly flavorful, pungent words that define the company. If your foundational documents for your company use words like world-class, unparalleled, and innovative, you have nothing. Those words are turtle wax words. They're the wax that you put on the car to make it shine.
Yep.
But it's not the true foundation. It's not the chassis of the business. Yeah. And you need to get down to that chassis level, the stuff that we will live or die for, based on who we are, the way we do things, and how we do it.
You just hit something that I think is really important, and I learned from a good buddy of mine, Marcus Sheridan, who was known as the Sales Lion. Now it's Marcus Sheridan International. One of the best guys on the planet. Love him through and through, and have been lucky enough to be a friend with him for a long time. And one of the things that he talks about is start out by writing out what you don't stand for. Who don't you serve? What don't you, you know, because sometimes it's hard to know exactly what it is you stand for. So he said, take the opposite. Who do you not serve? Who are you not a good fit for? Who's not a good fit for your company? Who's, you know, whatever situation you want to put it in. And that exercise that he taught me was really eye-opening to just say, okay, that helps me get a sense of direction. So I think, you know, to piggyback off of what you just said, that's a simple, tactical, practical exercise. And what you think about, if you've got a little bit of experience like you and I do with our age, is you think about the bad experiences you've had with clients, and you list out some of the things that what that person was like, or what that company was like, or what the whatever was like. You're going to start to see patterns over and over and over again, which will make it easier for you to say. And when you put that on your social media profile, or you put that on your website, that this is who I don't serve. And ironically enough, that is like the magnet to start pulling in the people who are like, I know what you planted your flag. I know what you stand for. I want to work with you.
Yeah. Sometimes the best way to know who you are is to define who you're not, or what you will or won't do. all of those things. If you haven't thought about that, that's actually a takeaway that both Don and I would love to invite you to do this next week, is to sit down with a piece of paper and say, not only what are the things that I will die for, but what are the things I absolutely will not do?
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the things that define you.
That might be a fun conversation on a Facebook Live or on the Facebook page for...
And here's the thing, too. The Nonfiction Brandversity is all about having these types of conversations and doing Facebook Live events. So if you aren't a member of Nonfiction Brandversity, the free Facebook group, all you have to do is go to Facebook, log in, search for Nonfiction Brandversity, and ask to join the group. I'm the guy who approves people, so I'm telling you right now, you're in. So I expect to see you on campus very, very soon. Don, thanks again for another incredible episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. We're going to have you back in probably a few weeks. And so, again, the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is all about having a variety of points of view from people who are really expert at what they do. So, Don, personal branding all flipping day long since almost the turn of the millennium.
The dawn of time.
Right. And we also have Chantel Sumas, who is killing it on LinkedIn, especially when it comes to creating videos tons of views.
She is awesome.
Yeah. Leah Rowe, who is the VP of People Ops at Health Finch, a local healthcare startup here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Who has a super cool little baby coworker.
Oh, yeah. Betty Pearl, the CEO in training, and others. So be sure to check out the next episode, which comes out Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, now on Spotify. And I'll talk to you next time. I'm DP Knutton. Bye-bye.